Yeah. And we're back. The greatest podcast in the history of podcasting.
Ever.
Ever. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Cam. How's it going?
It's going good, Ray. How are you going?
Peachy keen.
What's news in the backwoods of Virginia?
I ran across with my lawnmower a yellow jacket's nest and nearly died.
Is that a snake?
Not this time. No, it's a bee that stings. There was about 100 of them. Yeah. Oh. So half of my front yard is cut and the other half isn't. So I tell everybody it's like an artistic expression of the difference between summer and fall. And I think they're buying it. So, because I'm not going out there again until the snow to finish cutting the grass.
Honestly, you'd done half the lawn and you were like, it's time for a cigar. And you were lighting up. Your wife comes out and says, what are you doing? You go, bees. There were bees. Yeah.
She bought it, so.
Hey, speaking of cigars, big shout out. I know I did this on Facebook, but not everybody's on Facebook. For some reason, don't understand.
That's right. Sons of, anyway.
Also, not everybody is listening to the VIP, the console show. Like, what the hell, people? If you're listening to this and you're not listening to the console show, you just missed us talking to Mike Duncan.
That's right, the one.
On the console show. Like, you are seriously missing out. Get on the console show. Go to lifeofcaesar.com. Right. Figure it out. It's not that hard. Anyway, big shout out to Pat Purtle from Amarillo, Texas, for sending us a couple of cigars. He sent your cigar to me.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later. I'm in Virginia, for goodness sake. It would have been like $3 to ship it to me.
Yeah, but you don't reply to emails very often. So I get in. It's a quick in the dead. That's right. Like, it's fine. When you come here, I'll make it up to you. Anyway, thank you, Pat, for that.
Yes.
Pat is a Seventh Court of Appeals justice in Amarillo. So I said to my wife, if I ever need to kill someone, like I really just need to, I'm going to say, come with me to Amarillo.
That's right.
Let's go on a holiday. I'll take you to Amarillo.
That's right. All expenses paid.
Yeah. Then I'm going to whack him, bury him.
Boom.
Get caught. Confess.
Yeah.
Gotta confess.
Brag. Help brag about it.
And just make sure Judge Pat is there to get me off.
Yeah.
So episode 22, which I have informally titled Crassus Makes an Assus of Hisself.
Quite clever.
Thank you. I don't want to give away the storyline, the plot line here, but it does involve Crassus at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of episode 21, Raimondo, Caesar got on the good foot.
Yes.
I haven't found a theme tune for this episode
yet.
I'm sure you will. He crossed the Rhine for the second time.
Oh, that rhymed.
It did. Yeah. You like that?
Yeah.
I got plenty more where that came from, big boy. Crossed the Rhine, built a bridge, crossed the Rhine. Basically, just crossed the Rhine, said to the Germans, the Germani. Don't give any support to the Iberones.
Right.
And then came home. That was it. Just went over just to prove he could do it, I think.
Yeah. Well, I loved when they went over the first time, it took them 10 days to build a bridge. When they went over this time, I'm sure, you know, a couple days, whatever. And the Ubai pop up and go, hey, it's us. Remember us. We're still loyal. We haven't done anything. The people you want are the Swabai right over there. Oh, nope. They took off. So the Swabai condensed their forces, went deep into the forest and dared Caesar to come after them. He wasn't going to fall for that. But again, he made a point. I can cross this water any time I want. Don't test me.
Yeah. Now, we should just to let people know where we are on the timeline here. It's 53 BCE.
Right.
Sabinus and Cotta were killed sort of late in 54.
Right.
It's 53. It's still winter.
Oh, yeah.
And Caesar is about 46 or 47 years old, because we think he was born around about 100. We don't exactly know when, what time of the year.
Right.
But so he's 46, 47, round about there, which is kind of old.
Yeah, he's still kicking it, though.
Older than me. I just turned 44, so right. You know, and I'm creaking and aching. He's out there getting shit done. Yeah. Now, Ray, I haven't warned you about this, but okay. I wanted to sort of just diverge a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading some great stuff, particularly Christian Meyer's book, Caesar, a Biography. I don't know if you've got that.
Mm-hmm, I do.
As one of your sources, yeah.
Yep.
He goes off at one stage into a lot of detail about what makes Caesar such a good commander.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we've really spent enough time on this. Do you mind if I talk about some of his stuff, what he's saying about Caesar, for a few minutes?
No, please.
Because we've talked a lot about what Caesar's doing, and we've mentioned, I know that you've mentioned from time to time that, you know, he's meticulous, et cetera, he's a good planner.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we've really grasped yet what an amazing military leader he is already at this point, after five, 6 years, I guess, he's been in Gaul now.
Right.
So this is sort of some of the stuff that Christian Meyer says. He says it's not easy to say what constituted Caesar's art as a commander. At the very least, he had a superb talent for organization and planning, matched with extraordinary alertness and circumspection. Cicero called him terribly active, swift, and prudent. The Greek historian Cassius Dio said he was ingenious in discerning what was necessary, interpreting it convincingly, and addressing it with the utmost skill. He must have been able to foresee the host of possibilities inherent in any situation and to arm himself against them. Now, this is what I like about the way he's sort of depicted by some historians. I'm sure not everyone's going to agree on all of this, but
right.
He seemed to be able to think very deeply about all of the possible scenarios and plan for all of them in advance. He left nothing to chance.
Yeah.
In fact, Meyer goes on to say, he was well acquainted with the power of chance and sufficiently imaginative to envisage whatever might happen at any time. He planned everything very precisely. It was one of his maxims that not the slightest scope should be allowed to chance. It was a common human failing, he observed, that the surprising inspires in us greater trust or greater alarm than the known. He tried to avoid this failing in himself and to exploit it in others.
Mm.
So he figured he was going to plan everything, you know, plan every possible eventuality,
right,
and know and understand that his enemies wouldn't plan to that extent. And I don't really know if that comes through much in the commentaries. I mean, he talks fairly highly of himself, but I never really get this sense that he's sitting down for 3 months just planning every aspect of the campaign.
Not only that, but with all the traveling he's doing, you can just picture him, you know, kind of a lost look in his eyes. He goes, okay, if this happens, I can do this. If this happens, I can do that. If this happens, you know, and just planning out contingency after contingencies. And like the Boy Scouts over in the States, you know, their motto is always be prepared. And Caesar just, you know, I mean, some things he had to wing it, but other things he just literally thought things through and had a decent idea of what he would do if A, B, C, D, or E happened. And so he was ready to go. He was ready to move.
Yeah. Christian Meyer quotes von Clausewitz. Mm-hmm. Do you know von Clausewitz?
Yeah.
Who identified, well, for people who don't know Clausewitz, he was Prussian, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of fought against Napoleon and during the European wars against Napoleon, and then wrote one of the great treatises on military tactics afterwards, based heavily on what he had learnt from Napoleon. But Clausewitz identified as the distinctive qualities of the martial genius the ability to hit at once upon a truth that is invisible to the normal mind and becomes visible only after long consideration and reflection. Mm. The resolution that can become a habit of mind. Courage, not only in the face of physical danger, but in the face of responsibility, thus, to some extent, in the face of spiritual danger. Presence of mind, fortitude, force of temperament, and not least, precision in the use of subordinates. Meyer's saying that Caesar embodies these things, as I think Napoleon did too. I know Napoleon used to spend, there's some great quotes from Napoleon talking about how he would, when he was in the planning stages of a campaign, he would fret, panic, sweat,
go through the whole range, yeah.
Yeah, he said that he would freak out privately studying his maps, trying to think of, you know, all the possible consequences. But mm-hmm. then when he decided upon a plan, boom, he was out there and confident in front of the troops.
Because he'd already done his homework, yeah.
Yeah, and he would fret in private, but he didn't let the troops see that.
Right.
And Meyer goes on to point out that Caesar's wars in Gaul, and this is something I don't think I had fully appreciated until I read this, His wars in Gaul were different from the wars of, say, Alexander or of Pompey or really of anyone else of this era, because he wasn't fighting against kings. Mm-hmm. You know, typically in wars like this, one king would fight another king, and if you defeated that king, it was over. It was done.
Right.
But the Gauls, as we know, didn't tend to have kings. They distrusted kings. They, you know, they would kill people. Even Vercingetorix's dad was trying to appoint himself as the king of the Averni, I think, and got killed by his own tribe.
Wow.
So Caesar's just fighting this mishmash of tribes that don't, like in Gaul, there's no king of Gaul at mm-hmm. this stage. There's just a whole bunch of tribes, and he's trying to stamp out fires all over the place. And also, of course, the size of the territory that he has conquered is far greater than anything that's ever been seen before, certainly in the Roman Empire. No, you go ahead.
I was going to just add on to that a little bit. I mean, if you think about it, you know, Gaul's this huge place, all these different tribes. And before Caesar comes along, they have their way of life just like anyone else does. The tribes skirmish. It's a chance for the warriors to demonstrate their prowess, their courage. And again, they're not literally trying to wipe each other out as in genocide. They just want to dominate each other. They have this culture set, and part of their culture is based on, you know, raids and fighting and stuff like that. And Caesar comes along and says, you know, over time, he's saying Gaul is now is going to be a part of Rome and you're not allowed to fight each other. I mean, he's literally trying to take away a huge plank in their culture, and of course they're not going to be okay with it. And you know, by this time, one of the books I read, by this time Caesar's like, okay, forget Illyricum, forget Britain. My goal now, whether formally or informally, is to bring Gaul, the whole of Gaul, into the Roman Republic, to make it a province or maybe several provinces. And so he's got to get all this done before his second 5 years are up. So he's really focused on Gaul, but he's really messing with their way of life. And of course, they're not going to take it, and they're just going to keep resisting, get new leaders, keep fighting. You know, other people come up of age, and they're just going to keep fighting this guy because they think eventually, you know, they're going to win. Because, I mean, how long can Caesar and the Romans stay in Gaul? They're thinking they got to, you know, all we got to do is keep resisting this guy, and eventually we will win out. But they're dealing with Caesar.
You're getting ahead of the story,
Tim. Oh, sorry. Terribly sorry.
We will talk about the reasons for the uprisings mm-hmm. a little bit later on, I think.
Yeah.
All good stuff that what you say. All true. Yes. I think it's worth spending some time on later on in the show. We need to drill down into, you know, try and get into the heads of the Gauls,
mm-hmm.
what it must have been like. Just before we do that, though, I want to talk a little bit more about Caesar. Like, you know, he lived with the army, at least throughout the summer during the campaigning period. In the winter, they all went off to separate quarters usually. But and so because of that, he would have been on pretty familiar terms mm-hmm. with a lot of the, certainly the officers and right. the subalterns, people like that. He was continually out inspecting the troops, drilling the troops. So they'd be familiar with him. Like, he's not the CEO who's up in the ivory tower and never right. comes down to the factory floor. He's out there all the time, and he's living with them. He's enduring the elements. He's enduring the long marches. And we know, and we haven't talked about this for a while, I think, but we did talk early on, Caesar wasn't particularly a healthy dude. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of problems. He was considered fairly frail of health. And yet he, well, remember we mentioned in many episodes ago how he kind of, his self-cure for his kind of weak health was to push himself hard.
Right.
And to toughen himself up.
Mm-hmm.
So his troops saw him doing this, and I'm sure it was no surprise that, you know, Caesar's a little bit fragile, but here he is yeah. marching in the blistering heat out the head of the army. He's out in the fighting. He's in the front ranks when he needs to be. He's in the middle of it with us.
Right.
He's not just sending us out there to do it. He's out there with us. He's living with us. He's fighting with us. And I think it's important, particularly later on in the story when we get to the Rubicon, that we really appreciate how much loyalty Caesar inspired with his troops in doing all of this. I think that's the sign of a great leader, not just his strategic nous, mm-hmm. but the fact that he was loved by his men because he was there with them day to day to day to day for year on year on year. When he, at this stage, we know he was one of the wealthiest men right. in Rome.
Right.
He didn't need to be out there doing it on one hand, but on the other hand, he did. As you say, if he left and everything collapsed,
yeah,
you know, it's all for naught, because it's not just the money, it's the reputation. If he goes back to Rome and Gaul collapses,
right,
it's then
gonna affect
him,
yeah.
Yeah, his reputation is destroyed.
And not only that, but this particular winter, the winter of 54-53, he was out there with his troops in the darn cold, dealing with all this uprising. So not only is he with them with the campaigning season, but for this one winter, he was with them through the whole thing, dealing with it. So they've just got to be, these are like kids in their 20s and early 30s. They've got to be impressed to see this older guy out there with them.
Old man.
Yeah, yeah. Slugging it out. I mean, that's got to impress the hell out of any of his soldiers. It really does.
Yeah. So anyway, that's enough about Caesar for the moment. I just wanted to, yeah, it's enough about yeah. Caesar. Show's over. Thanks, so,
thank you for coming.
I just think it's really like, it's interesting to stop and just think deeply about what yeah. made him stand so far apart at this stage, everyone else that was around in Rome and that had come, the other generals, the other military leaders that had their fair share of victories and glory.
Right.
But we really need to appreciate the size and the scope and the success that Caesar's had. Like, he, apart from a couple of minor setbacks and things like Sabinus and Cotta getting taken by surprise and a few things that'll happen in this episode where he gets taken right. by surprise, He has pulled off victory next to victory, next to victory, next to victory yeah. in this massive scale, traipsing all over Gaul, northern Italy, Gaul, you know, France, Belgium, Germany, and also just moving with this speed. I think that was one of the things that shocked yeah. everyone, as Caesar just could move with lightning speed, blitzkrieg.
Right.
Just super, super fast.
Yeah, and it's going to happen again in this episode where he's just going to show up. They're like, oh, God, Caesar's probably going to be here next month. What? Oh, here he is. You know, that kind of stuff. So it's going to happen again in this episode. And we've all had bosses. Hopefully we've all had bosses where you've worked with one boss and they were down there with you, and then you've had other bosses who just issue orders. You know, you're going to respect that person a hell of a lot more and work a lot harder for them because you admire them. And that's what Caesar was. He was a doer.
Yeah. And I think, you know, anyone who aspires to a position of leadership today in business or any other field needs to learn from the greatest. I know Napoleon did. Napoleon was a huge fan and student of Caesar's mm-hmm. Leadership style and qualities. And also the Blitzkrieg, the moving fast thing. I mean, that was totally Napoleon pulled that out of the bag in his day because armies at that stage in the late 18th century would take months to leisurely march towards each other. Hello, how are you? Good. We're going to battle. I believe we are going to battle. Right. Let's pick a date.
That's right. I wish you luck, sir.
Napoleon would just be there tomorrow, kick everybody's ass, and before they even had finished waxing their mustache.
That's right. Well, that's important. You have to have priorities. But anyway.
So remember Sabinus and Cotta, folks. They were sort of taken by surprise by the Eburones, led by Ambiorix and Catuvulcus, who was one of the other kings of the Eburones. Well, Caesar goes Vestatio on their asses. basically, he... they're off hiding in the forests of the Ardennes.
I would be too.
Caesar sneaks up on them.
Yeah, so when he recrosses the Rhine, he leaves a legion there with a bridge partially intact, but he leaves a legion there, and he tells his cavalry to go on ahead and don't light any campfires because they can see that for miles away. And so his cavalry is able to sneak up on Ambiorix and the Eburones in the Ardennes. And so he's thinking he's going to catch him finally, put this all behind him. But once again, Ambiorix, however he does it, is able to elude Caesar's cavalry.
Ambiorix escapes, but his partner, Catuvulcus, king of half of the country of the Eburones, decides he's too old.
Right.
And here's what Caesar says in the commentaries. Catuvulcus, king of one half of the Eburones, who had entered into the design together with Ambiorix, since being now worn out by age, he was unable to endure the fatigue either of war or flight, having cursed Ambiorix with every imprecation. Do you know what an imprecation is? I had to look up that word.
But it's probably not good.
An imprecation is like a curse.
Ah, yes.
So he was cursing Ambiorix. You bastard, you got me into this. As the person who had been the contriver of that measure destroyed himself with the juice of the yew tree, of which there is a great abundance in Gaul and Germany. Do you know what a yew tree is, Ray?
No, what is a yew tree?
Taxus baccata, Ray, is a conifer native to Western, Central, and Southern Europe, Northwest Africa, Northern Iran, and Southwest Asia. Most parts of the tree are toxic. By the way, I'm not reading this. This is purely just, I know this stuff, man.
Of course.
Yeah. Most parts of the tree are toxic, except the bright red aril surrounding the seed. This appears like a berry with the end split open to reveal the seed and is safe to consume. So most of it is poisonous, but the fruit is good. Foliage itself remains toxic even when wilted, and toxicity increases in potency when dried. Ingestion and subsequent excretion by birds whose beaks and digestive systems do not break down the seed's coating are the primary means of yew dispersal. The major toxin within the yew is the alkaloid taxine. Horses have a relatively low tolerance to taxine, and cattle and pigs, etc., etc. So a poisonous tree. Symptoms of yew poisoning. So this is what would have happened to Catuvulcus.
Yeah.
Include an accelerated heart rate, muscle tremors, convulsions, collapse, difficulty breathing, circulation impairment, and eventually heart failure.
Wow.
That reminds me of, just reading that reminds me of Vincent Price's classic spoken word part on the track Black Widow on Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare album.
So you did find a song. 1978,
I think.
Right.
And which I'm going to recite now from memory.
Well, here we go.
The Black Widow, isn't she lovely and so deadly? Her kiss is 15 times as poisonous as that of the rattlesnake. You see, her venom is highly neurotoxic, which is to say that it attacks the central nervous system, causing intense pain, profuse sweating, difficulty in breathing, loss of consciousness, violent convulsions, and finally, death. So that's Vincent Price from memory when I was 15, man. Thank you.
If I could make a couple of brilliant points, please. The fact that you weren't reading any of that just, again, shows me the power of your memory. And interesting, I think it was – the book I was reading said he hung himself from that tree as opposed to the poison. I find that interesting. So your story is much better than mine. But
Caesar says he destroyed himself with the juice of the yew tree.
Ah.
By the way, before you cut me off, move on. The yew tree, interestingly, is also the wood of choice for longbow making. Uh-huh. And the oldest surviving yew longbow was found at Rottenbottom in Dumfries in Galloway in Scotland, Rottenbottom.
Wow.
Which was also one of Caesar's nicknames, coincidentally. It's been given a calibrated radiocarbon date of between 4040 BC and 3640 BC and is on display in the National Museum of Scotland. Did you know that the Scots were making longbows 4000 BC? I did not know that.
No. Me either.
So that's the yew tree. Sorry. Your turn.
That's fine. No, I just wanted to say, even though Ambiorix did get away, Caesar's men were able to capture his horse and some of his plunder. So again, it's just not looking good for Ambiorix. It's got to be humiliating as a leader. They're taking his stuff. They've got him on the run. His co-conspirator kills himself. You know, it's just not looking good. But yet, Ambiorix gets away, and it's just got to be very frustrating for Caesar that he can't put a bookend on this.
Yeah. And Caesar, you know, considers chasing Ambiorix, and then he goes, you know what, I don't have time for this shit.
So
basically, you want to tell what happens?
No, go ahead. I don't want to ruin your thunder.
Oh, well, dude, you can't ruin my thunder. My thunder is unruinable. He issues a decree across the land, hear ye, hear ye, and basically says, you know what, anyone who wants to fuck up the Uberonis and take their shit, it's all right with me. It's open day.
That's right.
Open day on the Uberonis and their allies.
Right.
Now, this is an interesting tactic that Vercingetorix sort of adopts later on. But, yeah, basically he says, you know what? You want a piece of the Uberonis and their stuff? You want to take their loot and their allies?
Yeah.
Go for it.
You not only have my permission, you have my blessing. So everybody's like, oh, yeah, hell, the party's back on. And again, you're dealing with Gauls who are used to raiding and plundering as a part of their way of life. So a lot of them sign up for this gig, and the Uberonis and their allies just have a really shitty 53 BCE because they're all going to town on their ass.
Not only Caesar's coming after them,
that's right,
but everyone's turning on them.
Right.
Even tribes from Germany cross the Rhine to come over and get into it. Everyone's like, whoa, did you hear what? It's open day. So
They're like,
But not you, because that's the yew tree. It's just yah.
Right, yeah.
But it backfires. Sounds like a good plan. But actually bites Caesar on the ass.
Right.
Now, you know, Caesar didn't mind a bit of ass play.
No, ouch.
But the biting, touch it gently
with
a feather. Yeah. Tickle it with a feather, that kind of stuff, that's fine.
And you have to have safety words. That's just very important. Anyway.
What do you think Caesar's safe word was?
No, it has to be a short word. It has to be a short word. Oh, God. I don't know.
There's one. That's the competition for this week.
That's right.
On Facebook. Tell us what Caesar's safe word would have been.
And it doesn't have to be in Latin. You know, that's fine. If I could add something to the story that you're about to tell for when Caesar's plan backfires on him. So they don't capture Ambiorix. So Caesar's like, okay, but we got to do something about this guy. So he takes his baggage train and he leaves it at Tuatuca, where the new 14th Legion is at. And he puts Quintus Cicero in charge of that. And he divides up his legions. He takes three legions. Labienus takes three legions. And Trebonius takes three legions. And they're scouring all over the place. They can't catch this guy. But every time any of the Roman soldiers get separated from the main body, they're attacked by some of the Gauls. And that's when Caesar has that oh, hold on. I got a better idea. Let's all go back to camp. And that's when he issues that edict that says, hey, go, you go at the Uberonis and Ambiorcs, they're fair game for everybody. So, so he told Cicero, he told Quintus Cicero, look, I'll be back in 7 days. Watch, you know, read my lips. Do not repeat, can do not step 1 foot outside of this camp. Okay. Remember what happened last time? Do not step 1 foot out. I will be back in 7 days and we'll regroup and we'll make a plan. And unfortunately, Quintus, for whatever reason, which we can talk about, doesn't listen to Caesar.
Yeah, there was actually this really long piece of dialogue that I found, which was great, where Caesar says, you know, now, Cicero, do you understand me? Do not leave the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Cicero says, right, I leave the camp. I have to leave the camp. Caesar goes, no. Do not leave the camp. Cicero goes, got it. I must leave the camp. And Caesar goes, no, listen. Whatever you do, do not leave the camp. Right, leave the camp, Caesar, yes. This went on for a long time. Yeah, so Cicero, I mean, obviously, he's the brother of the famous orator Cicero, Marcus Tullius Cicero. This is Quintus Tullius Cicero.
Right.
Obviously not the brightest of the two Ciceros. Because, as you say, you know, Sabinus and Cotta were attacked just like several months before this, probably. And so anyway, Cicero goes,
it's day seven.
Pretty safe.
Yeah, it's day seven. He said he'd be back. Something must be wrong. Oh, no. But
he sends his men out foraging for food, leaves the gates of the camp open. Like,
oh, God.
He's like, nothing's going to happen. Right. What can happen? We're in the middle of Gaul. They hate us.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but he was being harassed by his own men. They're like, look, you're being too literal about what Caesar said. First of all, Caesar is never too literal. And ironically, when Caesar put out word about everybody can go after the Uberones, about 2,000 Germans got word of this. And they're like, oh, okay. So they cross over and they're looking to plunder the Uberones. Now, there's two versions of what could have happened. One, they could have just stumbled upon the Romans first and said, look, we don't care where we get plunder from. We just want plunder. But there's another version that says that some of the Gauls actually found the Germans and persuaded them to go after the camp. So as soon as those couple of cohorts are out of sight of the camp, the Germans come and they start attacking those people and they start attacking the camp. And that's when Cicero is probably like, oh, I'm going to end up like Cotta and Sabinus. And oh, my God, this is not going to be good. And my brother's going to be embarrassed, but I'll be dead. So he's immediately got some serious issues to deal with.
Yeah, I think the main German tribe was the Sicambri, and mm-hmm. I do like this idea that they actually caught up to Ambiorix or the Gauls, and they did one of those things you see in the movies. He goes, look, don't kill me. I know where there's a lot of treasure.
That's right.
I'll tell you. If you don't kill me, I'll tell you where the treasure is. or they just got over there, were like, they were hunting for Ambiorix for a few days, and they were like, ugh. This is hard work. Yeah. This Gaul's a big place.
That's right.
He could be anywhere.
That's right.
You know what? Let's just go sack the Romans instead. Yeah. That's easier. They got shit. Let's just go take their shit instead. So this is where it bites Caesar on the ass. So, yeah. They just decide the Romans are easier targets. So they attack Cicero's guys, and they're inside the camp before the alarms even sounded, because he's left the doors open.
Right.
He left the door open with a big sign saying, I've gone out for a few hours.
Right. Be back.
Please don't steal anything.
Yeah. Or the sign could have said, Germani, enter here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please. Now, I love this next story. So there's this guy that Publius Sextius Bacillus or Baculus, I've read it in two different spellings, potentially the sexiest name in all of Roman history, Sextius.
I like that.
Except his surname, Bacillus, sounds more like a throat infection. He had been severely wounded during the battle against the Nervii, and Caesar actually mentions him during the Battle of the Nervii as being I think he's like a fairly senior legionnaire, very brave guy.
Right.
He's lying in the camp now, in Cicero's camp, still recovering from multiple wounds. hasn't eaten for 5 days.
Right.
He's sick. He's basically on death's door. But he kind of hears this noise, crawls out of his tent to see what's going on, sees that shit's going down.
Right.
And so he manages to stand up, grabs a sword, rallies whatever men he can find, and starts fighting the Sicambri until he's finally wounded again.
Damn.
And faints. And gets carried off to safety.
Right.
But this guy, so Caesar mentions him again in this book of the commentaries. This guy gets mentioned by name twice in the commentaries. What a complete badass. Now, I don't know whatever happened to this guy. But and again, it kind of reminds me of Titus Pollio in HBO's Rome series. Like, this guy's a total badass. I mean, if you get mentioned twice in the commentaries by Caesar, you go back to Rome if he survived and got back to Rome.
Yeah, rock star.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, he probably, you know, unless he went back in the Rubicon Legion. And,
good point. Yeah, good point.
Probably never got to enjoy, I'm guessing, the reputation that he'd built. But that's amazing. He's just a guy. Gets called out by name in the commentaries twice in two separate years.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Caesar appreciates you. That's all you need to know. Yeah. So some of the people who were caught outside said, let's head for the heights and let's get on some high ground and defend ourselves. They all die. Some of the people were able to fight their way back to the camp, even though they did suffer significant losses, but some of them do make it back to the camp. They get all the doors closed. They fight them all off. And, so, you know, I don't know what, maybe Quintus turned to everybody else and said, see, I told you. Who knows what happened at that point?
Yeah. So Cicero doesn't die. And
no.
In the commentaries, Caesar lightly smacks him on the wrist for disobeying orders. But he doesn't go Vastatio on his ass.
No, right.
Probably because he wants to keep Marcus on side, Marcus Cicero, friendly. Yeah. So he says I was going to read from the commentaries, but I don't actually have it down here. But he's fairly light. He basically says, oh, Quintus, you big silly. I told you. Go ahead.
And then he says, look, how was he to know that there was 2,000 Germans coming up over the hill? He couldn't have known that.
No.
Whereas if it was anybody else, Caesar would have.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vastatio on their ass.
Yeah, yeah. So Caesar spends the rest of the year searching for Ambiorix, never catches up to him. Meanwhile, both Caesar's troops and the Gallic armies who took up his offer to, go Vastatio on the Eburones and their allies do that, literally. They burn every village, every house, all the crops, all the cattle.
Yep.
They basically destroy everything that's associated with the Eburones or their allies. So even if the Eburones are good at hiding in forests and swamplands or whatever, they've got nothing. Food,
huge
no
mistake.
Shelter.
Yeah.
Now, Caesar says in the commentaries that they were wiped out. They were annihilated. But according to Tacitus later on, he says there's a new tribe in the area, the Tungri, and he says they were the original Germani tribe that crossed the Rhine. So it's possible that the Eburones pulled a Blackwater and just changed their name several times, hoping that Caesar wouldn't notice. You know Blackwater, the American private military firm that's just been found, well, some of their soldiers actually have just been found guilty this week of murdering 17 Iraqi civilians.
Yeah. ugly times.
But Blackwater, when they got embarrassed by that, changed their name, I think, to XE first, then again, after they had another scandal, to Academy. They just keep changing their name every time.
Then it was Rainbow Sunflower. No, <I'm> just yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what. So the Eberoni, Caesar says he wiped them off the face of the earth, but they probably went underground, changed their name, and.
As far as an organized political and military power, he was able to accomplish that using someone else's forces, which again is a very brilliant move.
It is, and again, so these are the guys. Let's just remind people for one last time. These are the guys that surprise attacked Caesar's legions under Sabinus and Cotta, and he couldn't let that shit stand. You can't be attacking the Romans and getting away with it. So he wiped them off the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm. And at some point, I know you're going to mention this, but at some point, we don't know when exactly. I guess he determined that revenge was satisfied because he started cutting his hair and shaving again. We don't know when exactly, but he had done what he needed to do to eliminate them as a power.
Probably when he wanted to get laid, I guess.
I would imagine, yes.
Yeah. Now, archaeologists report a huge drop in the amount of gold and other precious metals found in the historical sites associated with the Eberonis after Caesar went Vestatio on them. And the archaeological record suggests that they didn't recover for at least a generation. I mean, you got to imagine, like, these people were just wiped out. There might have been a few kids, few elderly, few women that survived, but it just took them 30, 40 years to rebuild. And it can be seen in the archaeological record, which is amazing.
Yeah. And not only that, but Caesar was making a point, don't do this, but we have yet to get to the worst thing that Caesar will do when he's in Gaul. So it's just it's just intense times in Gaul at this point. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, now I think it's time to go back to what you were talking about earlier on, the discontent in Rome.
Mm.
Give me a second.
Sure.
Chris is texting me.
Doesn't she know that you're busy right now?
She didn't open the door, but still.
Did you say texting or sexing? Sexting, I'm sorry.
Unfortunately, it's only the former.
Sorry. Yeah, so discontent throughout Gaul.
Yeah, so Caesar has been not just crushing the Gauls, but a lot of his policies have probably started to come home to the Gauls.
Yeah.
They've started to realize that, you know what, this guy hasn't just come to wave a flag and take a few hostages and some money and then go back home.
Or photo op, yeah.
Yeah, he's here to stay. The Romans are here to stay, people. Do you realize what this means?
Yeah.
And he's just created a whole new generation of Gauls that hate him. He's like, bombing the Middle East. The more brutal you become, even though it seems like good policy at the time, you know what, we're just going to come and destroy you if you don't do what we want. Basically, you just create a whole new... Unless you kill every living woman, and child, you're just breeding.
Yeah. Bitterness. Just bitterness. Absolutely. And Caesar's not done yet creating bitterness. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, there's more to come. But even at this stage, there was just, I think, the seeds of future resentment sown in the Gallic tribes. They weren't just going to lie down meekly and which I think is, the way that most imperial armies leaders tend to think, well, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to kick their ass and they'll say they're sorry and they'll be forever grateful.
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way. No. Even if the people you defeat say, okay, we've had enough, we'll do what we're told from now on.
For now.
The next the next generation or the generation after is going to be bitter and resentful and come after you and come after your children or your grandchildren, right?
Right. And we don't have to do this now, but out of all this tension that is created and this anger and resentment and bitterness, Caesar's about to light a spark in the middle of all this that's going to set at all this aflame, and it's just going to be really intense, which just sets up, you know, the show for next time. But so he calls another, and we don't have to go into this now, but he calls a council of the Gauls in Dudio Catorum near modern day, was that modern day Rheim? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Major town of the Remi. And so he has a council. And so he has a council just basically checking to see who shows up and who doesn't, who's at least pretending to be my friend. And I'll let you take it from here because I think you did more reading than I did. But basically at the end of the council, they're about to break up. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. There's just one more thing I'd like to talk about.
Oh, you're going to let me do it, but then you steal my joke.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jesus. Last time I ever rehearsed with you, you steal my material. So anyway, he calls this council. So people may recall earlier on, Caesar had set up a king, Tacetius, mm-hmm. In the Carnutes, one of the Gallic tribes. He'd done what he normally does. Go, yeah, you, Tacetius, I like the cut of your jib, young man. You are now the king of the Carnutes. And the Carnutes waited until Caesar had turned his back, and then they killed Tacetius.
They cut his jib.
Because they were like, we don't want a puppet king.
Right.
And Caesar hadn't done anything about that. He'd kind of had his hands full.
Yeah, he's busy.
Now he goes all Michael Corleone and decides to settle all family business. He calls him and he says, don't insult my intelligence. I know you did it, Carlo.
Yeah.
Come on, Carlo. I'm a Corleone. You think that little scene you played with my sister could fool a Corleone? And he holds an investigation and decides this guy called Acco was responsible. And then... The what?
Of the Senones. Acco of the Senones.
I thought Acco was one of the Carnutes. No, he was a Senonian. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Senones and the Carnutes were kind of in it together.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So he has him publicly flogged, beaten to death,
yes,
and beheaded. That wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And then he did number ones in his head, in his eye sockets.
Oh, God. I don't want to be graphic. Just picture being flogged to death. I mean, the body can only take so much abuse, so much shock. Maybe maybe he bled out. Hell, I don't know. But literally being flogged until you die. I mean, that's just, wow. You know, that sends a signal. That sends a signal.
And Acco was a fairly prominent Senonian aristocrat. He wasn't a king, but he wasn't a nobody.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, Caesar had already, he executed Dumnorix when he was going to go to on his second invasion of Britain, and Dumnorix was like, just stick around. And he decided Dumnorix is the one that had destroyed his grain previously. So he had him whacked, which was a bit of a shock to everybody. Oh, wow, yeah. Caesar's now killing.
That's one thing.
Just randomly executing senior Gallic chieftains he doesn't like. WTF.
You're right.
And now he's done it again, but in the most, you know, this wasn't, look, take him out in the woods and quietly, put a silencer on and clip him and bury the body.
Man.
Everyone knows what happened. No one talks about it.
Right.
This is in the public square. Everyone gather around. Everyone, hello. Testing. Right. Am I on?
We're about to begin.
Yeah, he makes an example of Acco, and again, this turns out like saying, "Hey, let's go get the Uberonis."
Right.
This turns out to be a bad plan. Like Caesar's pretty good at the tribal negotiations and working with his tribes for the first 4 or 5 years, but he's gone off the rails here a little bit. This turns out to really not. I mean, I kind of get it, yeah, making a public example of this guy, but he's just crossed the line, yeah, you know, as far as the goals are concerned.
And there's one more part after he had him beheaded, and I didn't read too much about this. I apologize, but there was this, was it a religious or cultural relationship? Something about everybody's head. I mean, when he cut his head off, it wasn't just to further humiliate him. It cut across the grain of Gaul's either religious or something. There was something spiritual or whatever about the head, and so that was just literally just taking it way too far, even though he had already done that with the flogging. So again, he could not upset these people any more than he possibly had, and he's going to, you know, pay the price for it.
Yeah, I think beheading has always been
considered
fairly disrespectful. Yeah, I mean, I think
I just read something about their religion and their culture, but I really can't remember. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know what you're referring to, but I think there was this idea in many old, tribes and religions that if you separate the head from the body, they can't make it into the afterlife like that, you know?
Yeah, so you mess with his body and his soul, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think I don't know what. Well, they were Celts with the Druidic religion or whatever, I guess, these guys. But,
yeah.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
Uh-oh.
I just randomly put my hand into the pocket of my shorts and pulled out some headphones. And I know that these shorts I washed them yesterday.
So they're really clean headphones right now.
Yeah.
No good. That can't be good.
Damn it. So, yeah, Caesar spends the rest of the winter with his troops divided so that he's got a couple of legions wintering in a position to watch over the Treveri.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a couple more looking over the Lingones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you pronounce that.
That's right. I was going to say that. Yeah, so good on you.
And good on you, mate. And the remaining six are concentrated near one of the main towns of the Senones.
Wow.
You know, he just executed Acco.
That's right.
Senonian goes, you know what? Just keep an eye on the Senones.
You're six freaking Roman legions watching your ass during the winter. I mean, that sends a signal too. So come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's winter, man. He goes into winter proper. Yeah. Like, this is the hardcore winter now. It's probably during these months that he wrote the books 5 and 6 of the commentaries covering 54 and 53 BCE. And there's some interesting stuff. Are you going to talk about some of the weird stuff that he put in these books?
Yeah, yeah. I just thought it was interesting. So what was book 5, the annihilation of the Legion, as well as Cotta and Sabinus? And I thought it was interesting in book 6, because he literally chased that guy around, Ambiorix, he chased him all around. He didn't have much to say in book 6 because there wasn't a lot of battles. In fact, I don't think he was in a battle that year. Labienus was, but he wasn't. And so he kind of adds pages to it by talking about German and Gallic culture. Some of it was totally unbelievable, and some of it was just, you know, it was an interesting window into their world, but he kind of pads book 6 with some fluff because he didn't kill too many people that year.
Yeah, he goes into great detail, and I really wanted to read it all on this because it's fascinating stuff. He talks about the Druids and the Knights, mm-hmm, and breaks down sort of the Gallic social structure. But he also starts talking about the wildlife, and I've got to talk about this because this is crazy stuff. He says there are also animals which are called elks. The shape of these and the varied color of their skins is much like roes, but in size they surpass them a little and are destitute of horns and have legs without joints and ligatures, nor do they lie down for the purpose of rest, nor, if they've been thrown down by any accident, can they raise or lift themselves up.
Ever?
So they've basically got wooden legs. And if you knock them over, they just lie there because they can't get up.
Yeah.
And they don't have horns. It's bizarre. Trees serve as beds to them. They lean themselves against them, and thus reclining only slightly, they take their rest. When the huntsmen have discovered from the footsteps of these animals whither they are accustomed to betake themselves, they either undermine all the trees at the roots or cut into them so far that the upper part of the trees may appear to be left standing. When they have leant upon them, according to their habit, they knock down by their weight the unsupported trees and fall down themselves along with them.
God.
So that's, according to Caesar, yeah. Elks have wooden legs with no knees, right. And they lean up against trees, and the way to catch them, I don't know why you wouldn't just walk up to them and push them over.
Push them over, look, yeah. And they'll be there until you get back. They're not going
anywhere. If they don't have any joints, how do they run? Right. I mean, how do they walk? It's like...
Maybe they shuffle.
They're like C-3PO, that's just, right. You know, going from side to side. A four-legged C-3PO just hobbling around. Wouldn't be too hard to just walk up and push them over, right?
And if they do fall over, hello, I've fallen and I can't get up. You know, who knows?
He also talks about an animal he calls an Uri, U-R-I, which is now called an Uroch, A-U-R-O-C-H, by, I don't know, archaeologists, because they're dead.
Yeah.
They're extinct. They're an ancestor of domestic cattle. They're like a wild cattle that inhabited Europe, wiped out as far as we know, last recorded anyway, in Poland in 1627. Wow. But Caesar's description of them, I thought it sounded more like a rhinoceros. He says there is a third kind of animal, which are called Uri. These are little below the elephant in size, mm-hmm. and of the appearance, color, and shape of a bull. Their strength and speed are extraordinary. They spare neither man nor wild beast, which they have espied. These the Germans take with much pains in pits and kill them. The young men harden themselves with this exercise and practice themselves in this kind of hunting. And those who have slain the greatest number of them, having produced the horns in public to serve as evidence, receive great praise. But not even when taken very young can they be rendered familiar to men and tamed. Right. The size, shape, and appearance of their horns differ much from the horns of our oxen. These they anxiously seek after and bind at the tips with silver and use as cups at their most sumptuous entertainments.
Yeah.
So that was the Uri, a.k.a. the Uroch.
Yeah.
So, he goes, book six is weird, man. Yeah. It's fascinating, though.
Yeah.
Back to Rome.
Back to Rome. Yes. So Ambiorix is having a bad 53 BC, but his 53 BC is nothing compared to Crassus's.
And that's where we have just now decided to leave this episode, because otherwise this is going to be the longest episode ever, and too much of a good thing can kill you.
Right.
On the next episode, 23, we will talk about what's going on back in Rome. But before we finish this episode, we need to do some comments.
Absolutely.
And we need to pick the Vestadio Prize too.
So
some great comments on iTunes over the last couple of weeks. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And we also need to do the patrons. I better pull up my patrons list.
Yeah, whip that out. Sorry, that came out. Sorry.
Excuse me while I whip this out. The new patrons since the last show, I've got to thank quickly, but lovingly, because the patrons are the people that keep us going.
We love the most.
The rest of you we really don't care about, but the patrons we love. Trevor Tuck, Josephine Lerwin.
Thank you.
Alun Watkins, Randy Blair, Liz Kulota, Christopher Smith, Brian Steele, Peter Gillespie, Patricia Xbox 360 Fan Club. I think it's Patricia Bosons, but that was the Xbox 360 Fan Club was her PayPal account. James Bunch, thanks a bunch, James Bunch, just like saying that. And David Charlesworth. Thank you, new patrons. Yes. We will not go Vestadio. We're still not up to the first 100. First century, I think we're sort of 75, 76, 78, something like that. We've got to get the first Centurie. So if there's going to be special things for the first Centurie. Mm-hmm. We're going to do something special. So if you want to be part of first Centurie, go to lifeofcaesar.com/patron and sign up.
Yes.
All right. Now, commentaries. There was a lot of great ones. I'm going to thank everybody, but only read out a couple of special bits. TF4074AUS from Australia, thank you. That's Tony from Brisbane. Thanks, Tony. He said, whilst not for everyone, I find this an excellent podcast. I think that's a compliment.
Yeah.
Lucky Cyrus from the United States wrote a very long comment where he goes into all sorts of political stuff, but which he says is good. But and then he just said, sorry if I ramble. Was a little bit rambly. He says, please cut me some slack, unlike your haters. But thank you, Lucky Cyrus,
yes,
for your long comment. Fishy from Australia, thank you very much. Good podcast. If you guys don't make more podcasts together, I'll pull a Sula.
Oh, my God.
Well, okay, just for you, Fishy, we will do more podcasts. This is one of my favorites. Coot59 from the United States says, Cam and Ray make history fun. These two are the history teachers you always wanted. You laugh almost every minute. Of course, getting these two off track just takes a second or less. The informal relationship Cam and Ray have with Big Julie brings him to life, a skill that many teachers wish they had. Keep up the great job. Keep laughing and keep us laughing. We'll do our best, Coot59. Thank you. Pontius Aquila from Australia. I really like this one. Content rich, on point, consistent, intelligently selective, well researched, educative, not even sure that's a word, clearly structured, and confidently presented. That's some other podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
This one,
yeah.
This one is this one is a bit like a 2-month-old Labrador, happy, careless, intermittently focused, but lovable nonetheless. Yeah, very clever, Pontius Aquila.
Yeah.
I think that's a good review. Nickname taken already, 2.0 from the United States, says, is it just me or is history dead? I hope not. People don't care a lick for history or its relevance to today's culture. Sorry if I'm making general statements, but it just seems to me that once you start talking history, people inevitably just put their hands over their ears and start to scream la 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 until you shut up.
Yeah.
While this podcast borders upon the irreverent at times, really, it only borders. I thought we've crossed over into irreverent many times.
Yeah.
And the jokes go on as well. Cameron and Ray, don't make me pull a Sula. I don't know what you're talking about, nickname taken already, 2.0. Cameron and Ray make history fun and entertaining. If nothing else, this podcast is a great primer for a more in-depth look at one of the most influential people of all time. Yeah. Couple this with their companion Life of Caesar Consuls podcast, and you can tell these guys have a genuine interest in telling Caesar's story, even if it seems as if they aren't taking it too seriously.
Right.
We're taking it seriously.
Extremely
seriously. Yeah.
Well, that's what the premium is for. You know, we get you excited about it, and if you want detail, that's why we have the premium episodes.
Yes. Okay, Wildpire from the United States. Not sure what to make of this one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those Christian American conservatarians who likes to listen to this podcast. The recent podcast kind of burned me with all the gay references. Same-sex marriage is not equal. Only traditional marriage is true marriage equality.
He's not Greek, is he? Sorry. Ancient Greece. Sorry. Ancient
yeah,
Greece.
Yeah, I know where you're going. But okay, Wildpire, like, I'm glad you listened to the show, but why are you going off on the whole rant against same-sex marriage? I don't even know what gay references. Did we talk about same-sex marriage?
No, but, I mean, Caesar had to live with those rumors about King Nicomedes his entire life, and we're just doing it every once in a while, so it was much harder on Caesar.
Might have talked about the gay marriage thing in Virginia.
Yeah,
the same-sex marriage thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Wildpire. Like, get into the 21st century, man. Totos, T-O-T-O-S from Australia, says, Human History, 5 stars. Thank you. Chad Conklin, 602 from the United States, love it, 5 stars. Thank you. Tiger Lily, Isabella Guy from Australia, great stuff. Mate, it's really entertaining. He writes that in Australian speak. Thank you, Tiger Lily. I like this one. This is good. Alex Outback from Australia, inspiring 5 stars. I live and work in the Outback, which requires many hours a week on the road and time spent away from home. Consequently, my relatively recent foray into the world of podcasting has been frenetic as I necessarily branched out from local AM, ABC, and my Glory Days music collection. After too many years, the drinking has remained, I must admit.
There you go.
It has been a revelation, and the most unashamedly revealing of all has been Life of Caesar. So you have my heartfelt congratulations on a great podcast. podcast that is improving each episode from a high base and has inspired me to get back into history. Aside from a tendency I have of unconsciously copying mannerisms of those around me, in this case, Cam's intonation and dramatic pause makes me sound like William Shatner. And then he goes on to complain about the new theme song. He said he liked the old music better. What? Wants to know, is it original or can you let me know the composer or put it back on or both? No, and no. Sorry, Alex. Sarah Puldasula from New Zealand says, wow, just wow, 5 stars.
No, thank you.
She writes a good thing saying, I downloaded this podcast expecting just another history podcast and got so much more. She has a boring job, listens to podcasts all day, usually tunes out, never with this one, spends so much time giggling, her co-workers think she's lost the plot, wants to get a T-shirt so she can indirectly threaten co-workers with what will happen should they piss her off.
There we go.
Actually, I should do this in a New Zealand accent, just for the fun of it. I downloaded this podcast expecting just another history podcast. No, that's sounding a bit cockney there. Puss me off. That's in still have puss me off. Fush and chops, puss me off. Okay, I can't really do a Kiwi accent that well. Thank you, Sarah Puldasula. Get the T-shirt. Stop threatening it. Just do it. We need the money. Muir IV from the United States finally caught up. 5 stars. Said by the time he hit episode 8 or 9, he really started to like our style.
Oh, good.
Give it some time, he says. It's nowhere near as thick as hardcore history. Right. Which is initially disappointing, but has significantly grown on him or her. Okay. Thank you. I guess that's kind of a compliment. Kind of. It's fast. It's loose. It probably talks too much, just like any attractive girl. What?
God, no, you can't say that. Muir, I'm sure we're all thinking it, but you can't.
Connecticut,
say.
USA. No, you can't say that. I don't think that.
You can't.
No. It's fast. It's loose.
Yeah.
Slut shaming, Muir. That's not on. No slut shaming, Muir.
No, leave us sluts alone. Them sluts alone. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, we like the sluts.
A lot. Sorry.
I like this one. The dog's testicles. 5 stars from Luke of the North from the United Kingdom. I came to this podcast as a fan of Ray's World War II gig and knew nothing of Cameron. Some say Cameron is a super liberal Aussie whose favourite pastime is yank bashing, and that Ray's style of presentation, particularly in his World War II show, is as exciting as listening to paint dry, quote from my missus, he says.
Wow, that's true.
Well, I want to go on record as saying that Ray and Cameron are the best double act in podcasting today and produce a highly, and not just today, Luke of the North, ever.
Ever.
Or ever will be. Let's just get that straight. And produce a highly informative, entertaining, and dare I say it, hilarious show. Thank you. Give the haters a finger, he says. I'm not sure which finger.
Yeah, this one right here. Oh, so you can't see it.
Chop it off and send it to them.
There I will.
Goat Emperor from the United States. Fun and informative. Thank you. Fatney 4 from Canada. Worth the listen. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then finally, Beck and Call from the United States. Great job. I'm hooked. I'm a podcast junkie anyway, seeing as I'm a factory rat and have about 11 hours a day to listen. I've dipped into the pool that is Caesar and I'm officially hooked.
Nice.
Being all audio, I have to imagine what these guys look like. I picture a heavy Ray. Sorry, bro, but you're American. Sitting in a toga, Skyping with a Roman war helmet on. As for Cam, I picture a kangaroo freestyling semi-genius, semi-retarded lyrics to Jay-Z songs while playing Fleetwood Mac on his guitar. What does any of this have to do with Caesar, you ask? Well, I guess you have to give it a listen and learn some cool history on the way. Thanks for the wild ride, guys. Thank you, Beck and Cole, but you only gave us four stars. If you love it, give us 5 stars. Yeah. 4 stars, not good enough.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you got what do you like, Ray, for the coffee mug?
Wow.
Do you like someone saying that you're a fat guy sitting in a toga? Someone who says that you're as exciting as listening to paint dry.
So many compliments, it's so hard to choose.
The guy in the outback who likes my dramatic pause, but doesn't like the new theme music.
That's tough.
The one who says that we're just like, oh, I like the content rich, on point, consistent. That's some other podcast. Yeah. That's clever.
Where's he from? Let me judge him. Where's he from?
He's an Aussie.
Okay.
But only again, gave us 4 stars. Sorry, you give us 4 stars, you don't get a coffee mug. That's a new rule. I just made that up.
It's 2 stars for you, 2 stars for me. That's not good enough.
No. We need that extra half star each.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. Lucky Cyrus, he gave us 5 stars. He goes on about Muslims and Christian right-wing hypocrisy and Iraq. A big, long political. He's, cut him some slack. Alex from Western Queensland is the Outback guy. He gave us 5 stars. Sarah Pulder-Sula from New Zealand gave us 5 stars.
Yeah.
Dog's Testicles. But he did say you're as exciting as listening to Paint Dry.
Yeah.
I did like that one.
And I'm not saying that's not true, but it still hurts. It still hurts. Okay? I mean, just picture being married to me. Oh, my God, that poor woman.
Anyway, this is my impersonation of Ray's World War II podcast.
Here we go.
Hello. My name is Ray Harris. And welcome back to the World War II History Podcast. This week on the podcast, Hitler,
yes,
and Winston Churchill have tea and cucumber sandwiches on the lawn. That's my impersonation.
Well,
hey, I'm not saying it's not good, man. It's got more listeners than this podcast has, so you must be doing something right.
I must be. It's my hypnotic voice. I'm between Alex and Sarah.
I think people put on your World War II show just to put themselves to sleep at night. Wow, that's why it's got so many listeners.
That is the third meanest thing you've ever said to me, you bastard.
You are now, you can feel your toes getting numb.
You know, if they pay me, I will make a tape.
Picture sheep jumping over a fence.
But not if it gets you excited. Don't
touch. Yeah, that's only the Kiwis. Speaking of Sarah, so who'd you say it's between, Sarah and who?
Sarah and Alex.
Sarah and Alex.
Yeah.
Okay. An Aussie and a Kiwi.
I don't think I've ever sent a mug to New Zealand. Well, maybe I have, but.
Well, that's because there's only 3 people left in New Zealand.
Wow.
Sarah's obviously one of them. Yeah. Pretty much everyone in New Zealand now lives in Australia.
Okay.
Except I think there's Peter Jackson, Sarah.
Yeah.
And my mate Grant, who runs a cigar business over there. I think they're the only 3 people.
Okay. So that means 33.3% of New Zealanders listen to this show.
I know. It's pretty good penetration, right? Yeah. Pretty good market penetration. And Peter Jackson, I'm sure, is a big fan of this show.
Love penetration.
All right, Sarah Pulder-Sula, you win a coffee mug. Email us, arve@lifeofcaesar.com. Give us your address. We'll send it. It'll get lost in the mail. You complain about it. Right. And then eventually Cameron will have to send another one from Australia.
Exactly.
Sorry, DK, David Kelly, but there is a new thing on the way to you. By the way, I just remembered Pat Pirtle, getting back to Pat, sent me an email this morning, which I haven't had a chance to reply to yet, but saying that we are the first podcast he's ever listened to.
Nice.
And that he loves it. So that's great. Thank you, Pat. I always love that when people go, you know, I've just started listening to podcasts and they stumble on this somehow. Wow. Like, if I was starting to listen to podcasting, this is not the first podcast I would listen to. It'd be This American Life or Radio Lab or I don't know. Why this one amazes me.
But we've ruined them for all other podcasts.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we did this competition in the last show. I said, come up with a slogan for a Vestadio coffee mug. There was a lot of entries on the Facebook page. Most of them were from Mike Snyder. Mike got a little bit carried away. We actually came up with some not too bad ones. I tell you what, I'm not going to read them all. I think some of my favorite ones, James Hingley said, I love the smell of Vestadio in the morning. Smells like victory. I didn't mind that. Mike Schneider had some good ones. I came here to drink coffee in Vestadio and I'm all out of coffee. He also had V for Vestadio, like V for Vendetta.
Uh-huh.
Brad Wicks or Wykes said, Vestadio, if you need to ask, you'll find out soon enough. Mike Schneider, I don't always pull a Sula, but when I do, I go full Vestadio.
Like that.
David Ryland, Caesar to Vercingetorix. That's not Vestadio. This is Vestadio. Bit of a Crocodile Dundee joke there. But this is the one. I'm going to take Mike Snyder's, one of his, and I'm going to amend it and improve upon it.
Mm-hmm.
He said Vinny. Well, he actually wrote Vinny, so he said wine. Wine, I came. Wine, I saw Vestadio. He wrote Vinny, Vidi, Vestadio instead of Veni, Vidi, Vestadio. Mm-hmm. Veni being I came. Vinny meaning I like to drink wine. So I like to drink wine. I saw, I wiped you out, which makes no sense. I like Veni, Vidi, Vici, Vestadio.
Which means?
I came, I saw, I conquered, I burned your shit to the ground. Veni, Vidi, Vici, Vestadio. What do you think about that as a coffee mug?
I do like that. You win.
Well, I'm gonna give it to Mike because I took his idea.
Yeah.
I improved on it, but that's what I do. I'm an improver.
Yes, you do that to everything I say. So
yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Okay. So congratulations, Mike Snyder. Mike, by the way, is a big supporter of the show.
Yes, and, thank you, Mike.
He was the guy who Skyped me for hours and came up and said, well, you should put up a wall of patrons. And so I did that. That was Mike's idea. Nice. Thank you, Mike. And then after I did it, he said, where's my cut?
Oh, no. No.
But Mike is a patron and came up with the idea for the wall of patrons. So good guy, Mike. Thanks.
Yes.
Mike also runs a private security firm. Ex-New Jersey cop runs a private security firm. So if you ever need protection, first of all, get Mike to protect you and then run down to Amarillo
Covered. Get protection, get covered. I like that.
Building up our little network of contacts in the United States. So, Mike, I don't know your address, dude. You know how to get in touch with me, though.
Yeah.
Email us and we will send you a coffee mug with Veni, Vidi, Vici, Vestadio. And I will put that up on our shop, lifeofcaesar.com/shop. So everyone can come up, I'll get to come up with some artwork for it. Maybe Per or Ernesto will do some artwork for us.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the show.
Wow.
Thanks for listening, Ray.
Thanks
for talking, Ray. Thanks for listening, listeners. And we'll be back sooner than you think episode 23.
Wow. Ciao, Bella. So, hey.